Welcome to A Cult of Personality Podcast, episode number 82, published on March 13th, 2010, at occultofpersonality.net. This episode, featuring an interview with Christopher Moores, is made possible by the Occult of Personality membership section. Thanks again to all those who've joined. If you'd like to sponsor an episode, please click the donate button on the occultofpersonality.net website. If you want to sign up for the membership section, click on the link right above the donate button and it will take you there. Now, in podcast episode number 82, our friend Christopher Moores of creativecosmos.org returns to the show to discuss some questions about spiritual theory and practice that arose after his last appearance in podcast episode 47. And once again, I want to welcome back to the show our good friend Christopher Moores, his website, creativecosmos.org. Chris, thanks so much for joining us again. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. A little older, hopefully just a smidgen wiser, maybe, if experience has taught me anything. But every day we live, hopefully we learn something.
And before we get started, I just wanted to mention that the previous shows we've done, which I think there have been three at this point, have been very high on the list of most downloaded episodes and got a lot of good feedback from them. So I know people will appreciate another opportunity to hear you.
Well, that's awesome. That always gives me energy and focus moving forward. You know, while I'm talking, I'm trying to kind of zone in out there and tune into what someone might be interested in and just kind of let the spirit express itself in the moment and have access to whatever I've read or whatever I've come to know and just share whatever I can.
And it's always good to talk to somebody who is in the process of becoming, I guess you could say, working on themselves in spiritual sense. Because there are a lot of questions for people who are seeking, who are into metaphysics and New Age and esoteric practices and philosophies. There's this idea people need a teacher or a guru. Now, I've heard some people who are of an independent spirit fiercely deny that anyone needs to have a guru or teacher or someone who can help them, who's been on the path already and gotten through some milestones. And then, you know, you hear other people talk about the idea that no, it's absolutely necessary. You have to have someone teach you. There's no self-made astrophysicists or people who have learned how to be brain surgeons all by themselves, sitting, you know, at home reading books and practicing on cadavers.
Yeah, you know, it's a couple things strike me. You know, first, the Zen saying when the student is ready, the master will come. You know, I've come to believe that that master, so to speak, is basically every moment. You know, everything we encounter, it is somehow a representation of that next step of our spiritual unfolding. It kind of happens automatically that we're presented with the various challenges which elicit from us a response which gets something from within forward, which we can then observe and work with and do something with in the unfolding, you know, in the continuation of this process of internal inspection that we do, kind of sorting out everything that happens inside. You know, I certainly think there's value to a teacher, though. You know, you can learn from somebody who has specializes in a craft, you know, such as, you know, I'm a musician, so I've studied with other musicians that have shown me many things. You know, the goal in the end is to be independent and to do it on your own and to channel that light yourself. And the best teachers will encourage that very thing. That's how you know you're with a good teacher or somebody who's really going to facilitate the process, is that you feel empowered. You feel as if now you yourself can do this. And that's why gratitude arises for a good teacher, you know.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense, I think. In your experience, is it fairly easy to recognize those individuals who are embodiments of that divine light?
Well, it can be, but I think you have to be pretty discerning. You have to be, this is one thing I always have gotten into the practice of, is slowing everything down. You know, nothing has to be in a hurry. And if I feel anxious about something or as if it's not right, I don't proceed. I take a step back, and I've learned that, you know, that's quite all right in deciding what's good for you and what's not. You know, and I think if you kind of lead with your inspiration, with your interest, like when you choose books to read, that sometimes people say they don't like to read, but maybe they're not reading the right thing, the thing that piques their interest. Because as many other listeners will know, when you read something that you're really interested in, you just burn right through it. And to me, that tells me that's a good sign, as that's something about yourself. That's something inherent in your nature. That's a sign. You can take that. If it's that easy and you're moving in that direction, that's going to be a good direction for you to move. So, as far as drawing other people, if somebody matches up with that interest, who then can inspire you further, and you feel that synergy of energy can be very beneficial. It's kind of being open, trusting, but also having a very keen eye of awareness that, you know, there are some out there who might seek to take advantage, and someone who has accrued a bit of cult power, has read a few books, done a few experiments, maybe been around people with a stronger, more power, you know, like a powerful aura. So they have a bit of that and can be very convincing, but always maintain, if you feel safe, if you feel strong, if your heart is open, you know, always reserve the right to move into your own space. And if anybody resists that, that would be the sign that they are not truly for your cause, but seeking to somehow indulge their own ego pursuits or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you become part of their trip instead of having your own.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Thank you. One of the other things that comes to mind in considering these subjects is the way our mind likes to, or I should say the way our ego likes to try to foil our awakening. I don't know if that's the correct term, but sometimes I think it is. In your personal experience, do you have any thoughts around the best ways to recognize the more subtle aspects of the ego trying to foil awakening and all these seeming little trap doors along the way?
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest, I think, is that mind or ego, or that ball of emotional pain expressing itself through the mind, or however you want to look at it, proves itself correct. It is absolutely it justifies itself and convinces you that whatever was done was necessary. that's why a good practice for that kind of thing is the basic practice of non-doing, or being non-reactionary. that's been the most benefit to me, over the years of, you know, is when I feel an impulse or when I feel urge to follow some course of action based upon one of these self-justifying thoughts, is I put a wedge there. I put a stop there and I do not act. I wait, give it some space, look it over, and then very consciously choose my course of action, which is often to just simply being aware of it is enough, and you handle the moment in the radiance of your being rather than some calculated strategy. Another thing that's helpful is to constantly renew your energy. Sometimes you can do this with a series of deep breaths. For instance, you take a deep breath and then you hold it in for a few counts and then, I mean, it's amazing. It can slow your blood pressure. It can kind of clear the system. You'll feel oxygen going through your brain. I mean, several deep breaths, something that simple, you know, and this is not something that unless you do it, it has no effect. You know, but try it. If you have a few moments and you're somewhere, if you're trapped in line somewhere and you get a little anxiety or you're late for something and you're driving in the car. And I mean, really, we have to just slow things down. There are very few things that require the sense of urgency. Like I gotta this and gotta that. And you know, as soon as you see that coming in, then you've got to, all right, you know, what's really important here? You know, I'm mostly grateful for being alive, and this is all a positive, you know, and things that arise we deal with after that understanding.
Very interesting. One of the ways that's always recommended, and I would feel very comfortable recommending it as well, to help facilitate awakening on different levels over time is the practice of meditation. And I know you've spoken about this before, but I don't think it can be overstated, the importance of meditation. I'd just like to hear your thoughts on that.
Certainly. You know, it's an ongoing practice. I tried to essentially meditate. I mean, there's kind of two ways you look at it. One, I meditate in the sense that I cultivate a sense of awareness or observation. I have a kind of a neutral observation point, if that's possible. And I look through my thoughts. I look through my emotional body. I check over my general aura status. I tune in to others. I'm open to input from all kinds of frequencies. I'm constantly monitoring all the different frequencies. And then when I want, open the door to the energy to course through, and then also not unnecessarily wasting energy with many kinds of leaks we could have. You know, and then there's also the practice of, like, let's say, seated meditation. You go and you sit. You can sit in the lotus position or with your legs crossed, or simply sit in a chair. If you stop and sit there, and first thing is to just do nothing. And many things might course through the mind, and that's fine. You do nothing. That's essentially the hardest thing about it, is we'll have 1,000 compulsions towards actions. But what we're doing in that moment of doing nothing is chiseling into our subconscious this deeper space which we can reside in, and opening to more room for our soul, our being, to express itself. So that space is very important and can be essentially carried with you in every moment of your life, and it continues to evolve. You know, I think one of the hard things is just like also like music is you have to practice in order to be a good performer. You can't just jump to it. There's just no way to do it. You know, some people can do it quite quickly, but meditation also, it's element of perseverance. You have to have it in mind, keep it in mind, continue to do it, and it will bear fruit. It's like anything else, the basics. You just have to take time to do it. And if you value it enough, it will bear fruit.
Do you think that there's any, or maybe you've seen this type of thing in the past, whether with yourself or other people, where like a spiritual high, some type of experience during meditation or some kind of out-of-body experience or what have you, is maybe even just temporarily confused with some kind of awakening or greater awakening? Or are the two interrelated to the degree that we shouldn't try to separate them?
Yeah, that reminds me of, in Osho's books, he talks about Satori and Samadhi. Like, Satori is when you have these little glimpses of awakening, and then Samadhi is when you're in that constant state of awakening. You know, another thing as we go through this process, because that's another thing in meditation, that's part of the fruit of meditation, is that some of these energies will begin to present themselves. And they're very powerful things, you know, from if you're releasing tension in your emotional body, you know, it won't just be released without us kind of a purging. You know, you might cry, you might have the anger. This is where some of these catharsis therapy groups have come into play in the past. You got to have kind of a safe outlet, or this is why I like the idea of art, you know, to draw or to somehow express these things, pent up frustrations, to get them out, you know. But all these things will, you know, will have an energy with them. Or if your third eye opens up and you suddenly see something on a cosmic scale that shatters your whole entire perception of reality up to that point, no doubt you'll think something major has happened. And something major has happened, and it is related to awakening. You know, that you're on the way, so to speak.
Now, you mentioned this samadhi state. I'm sure many people like myself have read about masters in practice or gurus or what have you who have miraculously attained this divinely touched state. They're in this field of consciousness constantly, whereas for a lot of us who practice, we, like you said, we only get glimpses of it time and again, if we're lucky. I'm curious about your thoughts on whether we should even be attempting to reach that state as our goal.
Well, you know, this is kind of goes into the whole fascinating and tantalizing concept of enlightenment. And then, you know, even saying that concept, well, that's part of the obstacle. It becomes itself, you know, an obstacle in the end if you are seeking that enlightenment, because, you know, as we read in the old Zen master stories, it isn't until you kind of drop it that it dawns on you, you know. And seeking the enlightenment can be a very intense experience. And I think it's a unifier. It takes all your efforts and kind of collects them and focuses them. So in that sense, it can be helpful. You know, it sets you forth on the journey. And then eventually, I think the more you understand what the journey's about, the more you focus on the journey and not the, you're not no longer seeking after something. You're more trying to appreciate as much as possible what's right in front of you.
Very insightful, I think. There's many different ways people approach this. In the Western schools, they focus on the idea of service. You're trying to make yourself greater than you are for the purpose of serving others or serving humanity, not for just becoming enlightened. In that sense, just the like you said, the concept of enlightenment for its own sake misses the point. And I guess some point along the way, people grasp that.
Yeah.
Another question that came up here, let me just see. Do you feel like a lot of the work that refers to kundalini energy, raising kundalini, working with chakras and auras and different moving energy through the body is directly tied to this idea of awakening or self-realization? Or is it possible to happen independent of these physiological, I'm not sure that's the right word exactly, but these effects that we may experience, is it independent? Is it tied to it? Can it be both or neither?
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's a good one. That's a good question. I think it works both ways. You know, I've had it be that that I had kind of a moment of realization, which then sent energy free in myself, and then maybe I danced a certain way across the room. You know, so in that sense, it was the opening up, tuning into the universe, pulling that inspiration down and expressing it through the body. Now, if we're talking about the practice of balancing the chakras and empowering the aura and awakening the kundalini, it's all good, all healthy. It's kind of like we now have doctors that are aware of physical body, and we have psychologists that get into the emotional body and somewhat into the mind. And then I think all this stuff moves into the next level of our, evolution, so to speak, into the spiritual realm, this is what wellness in its true form, I believe, is this general awareness of the whole energy system. As you mentioned, this is not speculation. This stuff has been documented since the beginning of recorded history in the East and all throughout various traditions of the world, and symbolized in many different ways. This is a whole field of knowledge, a body of work, staging of the evolution and progression of the consciousness of humanity. You know, I certainly acknowledge it and say it's beneficial to balance and harmonize that and to do it with care. It's good to do it. This is why in Buddhism, three gems, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, it's good to have Sangha people around you that in some form that you're connected with who are also going through these things, so that you can talk it through and share your experiences. And, you know, if you're alone, some of these experiences are so wild and amazing and bewildering and bizarre even that you don't have a touchstone. You can really drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's very true. And that might also go, I guess, to the idea of having a teacher or someone who's been there before who can help guide you if need be.
Certainly. It's certainly helpful. And that's generally through, you know, in a lot of these secret society type things or religious traditions or spiritual sects or whatever you want to say, that's often there's somebody who kind of is there as assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just everybody just needs to keep an eye out, you know, and keep it focused on good vibes.
One of the things that seems to come up with a lot of people that I speak with in regards to the show is this idea that the events going on in the world around us, oftentimes frightening, technology seemingly almost out of control, government and news media becoming a major focus, you know, vaccination to economic collapse to what have you. You know, you go on and on, I guess. But it seems like this shadow side that is playing out across the television and the internet and people's conversations about current events also serves as a way to awaken to reality, for lack of a better term. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it certainly can be. I mean, at some point, if you continue to focus on that, you'll end up going down with the ship. I mean, it's sensory overload. It's mm-hmm. too much for the nervous system, and it takes up all space if you let it.
Right.
And there's no space for you to be in your own body, you know. So I say with that stuff, you have to – this is where we might go talk about strengthening the aura. You know, I always try to – what I say is proactively radiate this aura, you know, that goes out a certain ways. And then I'm not letting all the stuff just come pouring into my being. I'm seeing it. I'm watching it come in, and I'm letting it pass by. I'm not letting it, influence me as much as possible, because it's all over, you know. So I'm in this little bubble passing through all these different frequencies out in the world. Part of the world or this place, I think, is, the provocative scenario, which gives us then the opportunity to work out these considerations for ourselves about what is good or evil, or what we believe the universe to be about. You know, true independence, and, you know, we were speaking of enlightenment, but one thing I always remember in regards to politics or America is, you know, that as far as I can tell, it's supposed to be a continuation of you have the Greek culture, the somewhat the Romans, and, you know, later we have like the Renaissance and then the European Enlightenment, and then that comes over to America, and that whole line of creativity is supposed to finally take full fruition, is to fully reveal itself here in America. And what I would see is the eventual success of that is where it becomes an example for essentially the rest of the world, and then the system loosens up and people can kind of travel more freely across the globe and choose cities that they'd like to be in, or yeah.
Mhm. Mhm. This is another question that seems to come up more frequently than not. When we talk about this concept of awakening or enlightenment, we know from past history that these type of things happen on an individual basis, but in the alternative media and New Age philosophy, we oftentimes encounter the idea of humanity having some sort of mass awakening. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, with that, I can hardly disconnect such things as the internet or the media, in the sense that we can all have instantaneous awareness of each other. I think that more than anything has kind of progressed the consciousness of the collective humanity. I mean, it's somewhat drove some people kind of crazy. It's pushed them over the top, or it's a lot of strain, or that's why the economies and, you know, all this posturing and all this funny business is basically how do we deal with the fact that we all know what each other's up to 100% of the time now. And on top of assimilating the whole of history, essentially, because now we have all this information available to everybody all the time, we're constantly reassessing history. So there's no real history to lean back on. There's no solidity to lean back on, which is essentially the truth. You know, they're never, it is what it was to the people involved. And then it's a story that then gets passed down and, you know, essentially it's gone. It's disappeared. And it's good to learn from. It's good to hear. It's good to soak up the experience or glean the wisdom of the circumstance. And it's, yeah, with all this information, we kind of see more of these streams throughout history and the reasons things were why they were and how we currently are part of those same streams throughout time, you know, recorded time anyway.
One of the teachers that you list on your website under the Soul School section is Jiddu Krishnamurti.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was one of these inspired people who oftentimes wrote about this concept that, forgive me for butchering his words here, but the truth is a pathless land. Had you encountered that concept in his work?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, Krishnamurti, I've read a few of his books. I have, in that case, been encouraged by others to include him in the Soul School, and I, gladly did, because I do think he has, the keen perception that you speak of. I haven't encountered that from him specifically, but I think I know what you mean and maybe where you're heading with that. And, you know, I recently had a realization of my own. You know, I was kind of on this track of where I really wanted continuity. I wanted it to be so, like, when I died, I could just keep a perfect focus right through the threshold, remember everything, continue my progress, not have, like, a cloud of darkness or anything like that. And I was really focused. I was like, that's what I want to have, continuity. And then somewhere along the line, that line of continuity I had drawn kind of dissipated, and I saw all the parts operating together simultaneously. You know, it isn't that far up the chain of vibration that time itself becomes expendable, and so in a way everything happens at once, or even everything that exists in pure potentiality, you know, like the seed. In the seed is the tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all happens at once.
Now, since the last time we had talked, you had put out or published a couple of books. One called Rainbow Sky, and the other Truth in a Sea of Obfuscation.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about these books?
Yeah, they're pretty funny. Rainbow Sky is a little different than some of my other pontificating. It's kind of like a delightful children's tale turned on its ear, with a leaning towards consciousness, or like Aesop's Fables without the morals.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of a fun book where I have interactions, like, say, for instance, Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster sit and have a cup of tea, and they just, like, talk about their feelings. or you know, I have animals encountering each other in the garden, or, you know, but it's all it actually does have kind of lessons interwoven throughout with unexpected surprises in the conversation, but it's pretty funny, and it's a different kind of a read, and it's something to check out. The other book, Truth in a Sea of Obfuscation, is kind of an extension of its forerunners, Pearly Gates Press and Ruminations of the Universe. I kind of consider those two books to be really, pillars of a time of my thought. And then the Truth in a Sea of Obfuscation is a continuation of that into the even more, out there realms. You know, I always try to go out there without any limits and, continue to reach further and further and, set myself, free from anything that would tie me up, you know? In reading my books, you share in my own process of, unfolding or, you know, development.
During meditation or when one has, some sort of spiritual experience, profound experience, I've felt this way, and I know other people I've talked with have felt, in a sense, like they were all of the sudden returning to, for lack of a better word, because I know our language can't really accommodate these type of things as well as we would like, the feeling of being back in a familiar space where time did not progress since the last time we were aware of being there. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I know, I think I know what you're talking about because, and to me, I guess I think of that as like the Lotus Paradise consciousness. Or when you're tuned into the Om vibration and it starts revealing to you the deeper mysteries underneath it all. And one of the things that I've encountered in some of these experiences is everything that happened, this I remember clearly, it was that everything that happened was to get me to that place. Like all the things I worried about or everything in the world or everything I'd have gone through and all my journeys through lifetime after lifetime was to get me right there in that space, in the here and now, tuned into that vibration, to that consciousness, to that presence. You know, I do think of it like the Holy Spirit in a way. That's it is a spirit. It has a personality almost, you know, I mean, we have words and we try to do our best to express, but there's a character, there's a quality, a friendliness, a universality, and it's like it wipes the struggle clean through revealing that interconnectedness or it does make sense in the end, or, you know, however crazy it seems or harsh it seems or, whatever troubles might befall you that seem unjust, somehow in the end it does make sense because it brings you back to that place of where it all makes sense. It's all healed, it's all dissipated, it's all restored. It's, you know, so much of the language in the holy books of the world are the people trying to describe that experience, that indescribable experience, that undercurrent of universality.
I was curious about, on your website, you have The Path of Enlightenment through Composed Novel. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, interesting you bring that up, but it's kind of a, I'll put that down there for someone to stumble across and enjoy. It's kind of, I'd call it a reverse Dante's Inferno. Instead of going down into the depths of hell, you kind of journey into the astral realms and have different encounters. Or, you know, it's like I'm kind of weaving in dreams I've had or experiences I've had or ways that I understand the astral realm to be in a story, which is kind of a different course for me. You know, a lot of times I've been very direct in the transmission, but in a story, you can have fun with it. You can play around. You can mix fiction and fact for the revealing of a greater truth. Or, you know, once you're exposed to these possibilities or the way certain things might happen, then you'll more readily be able to recognize them when they happen to yourself and realize that there's meaning to it, that there's something to why these things happen. There's a deeper purpose to it all. And sometimes even if you're struggling, then that more than ever is the point to refocus on what it's all about for you. It's an attention getter to bring you fully into the here and now to evaluate again, anew, your circumstance henceforward.
Mm.
You know, that's an immensely helpful thing to do as often as you can, to refresh your perspective, to reevaluate, because everything is always changing, always moving, and you have to be flexible and sharp in your vision and discernment.
Yes, definitely. A lot of people, including myself, you know, working through a lot of these issues, there's a lot of fear about change, about discarding outworn habits or ideas, ways of life. I think people naturally seem to want to hold on to what they know, the ways of life that they're accustomed to, even though they may not be useful anymore. Do you have any advice for people who are going through that kind of, it's not maybe a tangible fear in itself, but more a fear of letting go and embracing new potentialities?
You know, that one, I think, is one that's very well addressed by example. You know, this is where the people who listen to these shows or who are working on these processes with themselves, this is where you can really make a difference in day-to-day life. Over the last couple of years, it's been the biggest thing that I've tried to focus on. I write these books and I do these shows and I express it all in one way, but also what in my life, just amongst everybody, you know, people that aren't necessarily wanting to read an esoteric book, but they might use and benefit from a friendly face, a helping hand, just somebody who has good conduct or is generally pleasant or helpful, you know, that you're contributing in a positive way, you know, that is very helpful to the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. We're all in this together, even though we may not know it at certain times.
And, you know, also for myself, sometimes that to me is an affirmation that there is something maybe beyond us at work compelling us to get together in a forum such as this to discuss these topics that then in some way reaches somebody and touches their lives. I mean, that's quite a powerful cycle. You know, that's a beautiful thing, and nothing can make me happier on this planet than hearing that. And I never get tired of, you know, I love every email, every note about somebody, you know, comments or sharing something they have about the work. It's great. It's what I'm doing it for, and what I think you know, maybe you're doing it for.
Yeah, absolutely. Long before I started doing this, I had a moment or two during meditation where I basically came to the point where I was in a space where it was like, who is sitting here? Who is observing this thought stream, this emotion, this feeling, who is the consciousness behind this? Who's the real observer? Or what? That may be a better term. It also reminds me of that saying, if two or more are gathered in my name, I will be in their midst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You know, what compelled me years ago to start doing this kind of thing is in one of those moments of attunement when I felt I was aligned and everything was as it should be, I felt my heart kind of burst open and what I felt over and over coming through was God, 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 good, 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 give, give, give. And it all became clear to me that that was going to be how I was going to proceed, is that was what I had to share with the world. And so then I slowly over time built up my site, my art, and my music, and all these different ways in which I essentially encode that original inspiration I had in that moment years ago. Mm-hmm. God, 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 good, 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 give, give, give.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. That's a really perfect way to put it.
And that's just what I felt rise in my heart, you know. That didn't come from my brain. That came from my heart, which is why it was so moving and intense to me, you know.
I'm just curious, in your experience, did you learn about chakras and the energetic body fairly early on, or was it something that took some time and meditation to come to awareness about, or maybe both?
Yeah, I kind of went at it from a couple different angles. I mean, one, I started reading everything under the sun about all of it, you know, and so I read chakra books and did the CDs that you can do a visualization and also humming the chakras, and you know, but what really felt like it worked for me was, say for instance, this is I opened my heart chakra by doing the things I enjoyed. You know, it wasn't a practice of like, okay, I got to focus on my heart chakra and, you know, okay, color green and maybe this pitch and this and that. It's like when I started writing song and singing the songs that I had always longed to sing, then my heart became wide open. Mm-hmm. And I felt it. I felt the chakra unfold and open up and truly could feel it in it as the energy phenomenon that it is, you know. And so in that way you kind of you learn it through experience, and then, you know, you can read about the stuff to kind of corroborate it, supporting materials, and you know, it's got like general maintenance, that kind of thing. But I think you truly open and balance the chakras by working on the issues within the realms they exist.
Well, that makes sense, and it certainly correlates with most, if not all, of the ancient philosophies and schools, especially from my experience personally in terms of, you know, the way they correlate the chakras and inner metals and the planets and transcending each one in certain order. And not too long ago, I did an interview with a guy named Ezra Sanzer Bell, where we talked about music using color and musical notes, and doing a meditation practice called marcatone, where you'd intone a note and visualize a color simultaneously. And the goal of this practice was stated as to bring about an understanding and a realization of perfect pitch in the practitioner. But one of the things I learned along the way in just researching and talking with Ezra was the way that music affects us on such a deep, profound level. And I know I was aware of it, even though not maybe not fully aware in a conscious sense, but emotionally, physically, energetically, I was always aware of this. But being a musician, I'd just like to hear your thoughts again about music and how it affects us so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an immense topic. I guess first thing that occurs to me is it is almost like a type of magic, you know, like when you see that old cartoon, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, you know, the conductor almost is conjuring magic there on the stage with an orchestra. You know, I mean, everybody's tuning in and working together and working towards a common purpose and opening up to this flow of music or any kind of music. You know, there's music that can like pep you up. There's music that can soothe you, can calm you. There's music, you know, some of it depends on the style, the beat, the tempo. You could affect almost any kind of mood through music because it's goes right to back to the essential. I mean, to me, the basic thing underneath it all, underneath all these conversations is the basic vibration. And then from that basic vibration, you start coming out and unfolding different expressions, be it matter, colors, sounds, you know, everything can become a palette of that vibration's expression, and underneath it is that vibration. So music hits us at a very deep level, it affects the feelings and it stimulates the mind, but it reaches us also just in a general vibration, in a general feel. You know, it tunes our frequencies. It can bring us health, or, you know, it can even be used to harm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely powerful in many ways. The different instruments will have a different effect. The different registers will have a different effect. Different scales will have a different effect. Different styles, different combinations. It's an endless palette of expression that can be harnessed in almost an infinite number of ways.
Do you work a lot or at all with symbols and trying to use symbols and implant ideas in the subconscious or things like tattvas or anything like that?
You know, I try to be aware of symbology and, you know, I think things like tarot cards or animal totems or numerology or, you know, I think kind of one thing about symbols is you come to an understanding with the universe yourself of what a given symbol might mean. You know, it's kind of a whole other stratosphere of language. It's a whole nother type of language. And, you know, that's why a lot of people don't even see the symbols, because unless you understand that it's a kind of language, almost like a hieroglyphics of where that symbol has a whole backstory of meaning. And then when you combine those symbols, you get a whole elaborate tapestry of messages. You know, it could be referenced in a lot of ways, and of course using different combinations you can gesture to many different things. I think certainly symbols can be used to channel forces. You know, you can put a symbol out there over and over and over and over and over again, and I think it will have an effect on somebody and start to have its own momentum. Symbols are just that way. They're like putting a stake in the ground, you know. And that's why symbols are used in ritual magic, because it's kind of saying to the universe, I intend this. In which case the universe will then respond or nature will respond, or whatever the type of thing you're trying to do. But certainly, and then also the, like as in animals, totems or something like that, if that's one way that you can understand symbolically with the universe or nature or however you choose to look at it, you know, you encounter something unusual. Of course it has a meaning. It happened in that moment of your life. You know, everything has a meaning. That goes back to what we were talking about of the moment being the master. What does this moment mean? What is it all about? What, you know, because it happens on many different levels simultaneously. It goes deeper and deeper in its profundity if we can go there with it.
You're very familiar, of course, with Zen Buddhism and Zen philosophy. And one of my favorite teachers, I guess, in this area of expertise is Thich Nhat Hanh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's great.
Do you have any thoughts about him and the way you encountered his work and the effect it had on you?
Oh, it had a huge effect on me. That was some of the early stuff that I encountered, you know, the book Old Path, White Clouds, I had with me on a trip that was essentially my biggest breakthrough, kind of where I became awakened to the level of where I understood that I was part of a bigger universe. You know, I wasn't just, it was no longer self-absorbed, that in just closed in on myself. I suddenly felt the vastness of the universe and the sanctity of the gift of life, which compelled gratitude in my heart, and I wept and cried, and it became tears of joy in the sense that I was a clean soul standing on planet Earth with my eyes wide open, and I had the Thich Nhat Hanh stuff with me at that time. It's very clear. He says exactly what he means. It's good introductory material, and it's good advanced material. You know, it's just part of the nature of what he does. It's the simple truth. It's just laid on in complete display, you know. Mm-hmm. I think the book Living Buddha, Living Christ is very good book, especially for people that have had Christian background and are interested in some of the Zen concepts, and to see and understand that they are not opposed in any way, that they can work together as part of harmonizing your life, and in fact enrich each other from the differing perspectives and ways they approach these esoteric concepts, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, he constantly reminds you to come back to the moment. I'll never forget. I was on the campus of University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, probably 1999, in the year 2000. I was just sitting around campus, and I just was still, and I was just feeling the breeze going through the trees and this vast currents of energy floating all around, and I was just amazed. It was a miracle. Every second was just like a miracle.
Another question I think that comes up frequently is a lot of serious spiritual practitioners feel a need at some point along the way for solitude so they can practice and not be disturbed. What's your opinion about that? Is it crucial? Is it helpful? Or is this another little pitfall that our mind can lead us down?
Well, I kind of went into about 6 years of semi-solitude. You know, I still saw people, but I was basically holed up, and my one and only goal was expansion of consciousness. And I was, you know, that was in a time when I was writing a lot of songs, or it was developing the creative cosmos idea. You know, I don't think it's absolutely necessary, but the reason for doing it is getting that, in order to get a fresh perspective on your life and to create that new space inside yourself for this inspiration to grow, sometimes you have to disconnect from your old patterns or somehow change the cycles that you're on. You know, break the patterns, break the habits, you know, and sometimes it's hard to do if you're part of a whole network of people or events and everything's like counting on you or running through you, and you're, you know, then you get totally involved in what you're doing in the world and you get less and less time for that, and then maybe one day you want to just stop. You want it all to stop. You want to get some space for contemplation, you know. I think it is as per individual, but I don't see anything wrong with withdrawing to some extent. I believe we all have a right to do that. Essentially, we're here to discover what our own life is about. And so we need to do whatever we need to do to make that happen. And if we need to get away, get some space, try to, in order to sort things out, because sometimes there's a lot to sort out. More times than not, it's a whole, mixture of things on many, many different levels that we have to untangle in order to heal that energy. See, to me, that's, rather than trying to, from the outside, trying to tinker with this color or that color, I like to untie the inner knots in order to set that energy free. And then it will be where it's supposed to be, you know, humming in harmony in its original intent, in its pure expression.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We're very quickly running out of time. And before we did, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to, you know, if you had any thoughts for the people listening or anything else in particular you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, I'd just say I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to everybody. I'm just glad to be here, happy to be alive, doing my thing, living my life. So I wish everybody all the best and hope things go well for you. Thanks for tuning in. You can visit me on the website, creativecosmos.org, anytime. Please read the books, look at the art. Have a good time. Buddha. Buddha. Sitting on the tree in the sun. In the sun, shower me with your compassion, free the chain of mental ration, empty me of worldly passion, help me run. Help me run. From beyond.
Buddha, like you did for Mahakashyapa. Show me that sweet land, Nirvana, finally done. Finally done. In the sun.